Shalom and welcome. I am Richard Address, Director of Jewish Sacred Aging, and we welcome you to another in our series of Jewish Sacred Aging podcasts. These podcasts hope to feature conversations that relate to issues that touch on the impact of longevity within our community. And we welcome your comments and suggestions to www.jewishsacredaging.com or to rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. And we now welcome to our podcast microphones Rabbi Ben David, the senior rabbi of Adith Emanuel in beautiful Mount Laurel, New Jersey. Welcome, Ben. Thank you for giving us your time. Nice to see you.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
We specifically want to talk about this amazing High Holiday sermon that you preached for this past High Holidays. And it dealt with your own personal journey. You're dealing with cancer. And there's lots to talk about. The sermon is available on our website, Jewish Sacred Aging, and we posted it also on the Facebook page and got tremendous response. So you begin this sermon with this wonderful image about sitting in the chemotherapy chair, looking across the street at the University of Pennsylvania Hospital. And what did you see?
Right. So all of a sudden I was at Penn Hospital. It all happened very quickly. I was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in January, actually the day after my 39th birthday. And within a matter of weeks, I'm a patient. It happens very quickly. And I received all of my treatment at Penn. Thank God we live close to a premier healthcare facility like Penn. And one of the things they don't tell you when you're diagnosed with cancer is that there is so much waiting, so much sitting, so much anticipation. It's not all drama. So I would sit in this chair on the oncology wing at Penn. And although I had a lot of visitors and I had a lot to do, there were times when I was really just literally staring out the window. And what did I watch over the course of those many months? But a hotel actually right across the street was being dismantled very gradually because it's in this very precarious spot surrounded by other hospital buildings. So it's not like they could come in with a wrecking ball and just sort of destroy it or implode it like they've done other buildings in major urban areas. So I would watch them literally just taking this building apart brick by brick, as I said in the sermon. And on the one hand, that was fascinating to watch. On the other hand, as I was beginning to think about how am I going to make sense of this narrative? How am I going to put this together into sort of one cohesive story? Where in the world am I going to start? That started to resonate as sort of a I think, a really important metaphor for me. Because that's kind of how I felt. I felt like I too was being taken apart and very, very gradually. And then I started to connect that to the fact that so many of us could sort of relate to that idea that this sort of gradual sort of undoing of ourselves over time. So that sort of set me off into just sort of beginning to think about what this sermon might look like when the time comes.
What was it like moving from clergy person who takes care of people to patient?
Right. Well, you know, the difficult part is that it's not like I could take one hat off and put the other one on. I was both all of the time. So I was a patient for 5 or 6 months there every single minute. You know, I had nurses tending to me. I took no shortage of meds. I was a patient like any other patient ever would be. But at the same time, I was a rabbi every single minute of that time period as well. So I found myself in this sort of strange position of having to console and comfort congregants regarding my own sickness. You know, they would come to me, Rabbi, I'm so worried about you. Rabbi, are you okay? Rabbi, how are you feeling today? And my having to reassure them all the time, I'm okay, I feel good, I'm in good hands, it's all gonna be fine, which was true, which was always true. But I was sort of playing both sides of that all the time.
What did that feel like? I mean, did you ever want to stop inside as you're having this conversation and say, wait a minute, just leave me alone. What are you, I'm here. Why are you?
There might've been those moments, but I think more than anything else, I appreciated the fact during that time that I was a rabbi, that I was still a rabbi, you know, even if I was in this sort of hospital garb and my hair was falling out and all of it, I was still a rabbi. Mm-hmm. And I never stopped seeing myself as a rabbi, and they never stopped seeing me as the rabbi. So I, you know, although at times maybe I didn't have all the energy for it, I did appreciate the fact that I still got to do that, and they were still seeing me in that capacity, because the last thing I wanted to be seen as was a patient, you know, and I didn't want to see myself as a patient. So, you know, everything I could do, even while in the hospital, to sort of remind myself I was a rabbi, I did that. You know, I like to study Talmud every day. I still did that. I did some writing. I even, from on one of my hospital visits, I planned out a funeral. There was a family that had a loss in the congregation, and I spent a half hour with them on the phone talking about, okay, here's when we're gonna do the funeral. So I was still a rabbi throughout all of it.
You mentioned that you found comfort and sustenance, if that's the right word, in reading the Tanakh.
Yeah, yeah, I did. I mean, I read a lot, like, because like I said, there was nothing to do. So I was reading, I was watching movies. And at a certain point, you know, I think there was this sort of inclination or this tendency people had, they thought that I wouldn't have it in me to read anything serious, you know, so they brought me all these novels and it was all very light. And some of that was good, but I found that I was looking for something deeper. I was looking for something that would be reassuring. And so, you know, one of the things I would do is I would read the Torah portion of that week, just like I would do if I was at the synagogue and I was preparing in elite services. And I liked that. And I saw it all in a new light as I started to see everything in a new light, you know? So, you know, it sounds almost flippant, but you know, my faith, meant the world to me and helped me through that time. It really did. And our tradition, the words of our tradition really did help me and sort of motivate me sort of to keep going, in a really powerful way.
I mean, you've walked this walk now, and you deal with people in the congregation in a professional way who are dealing with serious illness and having to come through it. What is it about your journey that resonated with transformation and hope, as opposed to people that all colleagues deal with who, in a similar situation, curl up and lose hope and lose faith?
Yeah.
And don't find faith? What,
right.
Now that you've walked this walk, what is it? What do you think is that trigger?
How did I wind up on sort of in this sort of camp where I'm hopeful and optimistic? I think part of it is sort of who are you going into it? Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm just a hopeful, upbeat person. That's just who I am. That's who I've always been. I'm optimistic. I'm hopeful. I like to laugh. Yet I try not to take myself too seriously. So I think who I was going into it made a big impact on sort of how I dealt with the whole saga. I also like to, you know, it really reinforced for me that everyone's journey is so totally unique, you know, that you could find another 39-year-old who had non-Hodgkin's and they would have their own story. And, I think it's sort of important to keep in mind that, you know, although I had cancer and although I went through all the treatment and although the times were tough, I still don't fully understand what it means, you know, for you sitting in that chair, lying in that hospital bed to be dealing with this. Maybe I'm a little closer than I was. So I'm very sensitive to that. And, you know, I'm also even more sensitive to what it means to be a patient. You know, I've walked into a lot of hospital rooms, a lot of nursing homes. I've been with a lot of people struggling with a lot of stuff over the course of their years. And I think I'm just a little bit more sensitive now to what it means to be there. What it means to be a patient and be seen as a patient, or what it means to be struggling in some way. I think I'm just a little more sensitive. I still wouldn't be so presumptuous to say, I get it. I understand what you're dealing with, because I think unless we're that person in that hospital bed, we don't fully get it.
But there's a certain empathic response now that as you're alluding to that you had, sadly, as a result of the cancer, that was not there before the cancer.
I think so. You know, I sort of walk this line between the cancer having changed me, mm-hmm. and here are all the things that I am now that I wasn't before. You know, maybe I'm a little more grateful, maybe I'm a little more patient, maybe I'm a little more upbeat, versus maybe sort of the victory lies in not having let the cancer change me at all. Let I was sick and now I'm better and now life goes on. And beating cancer means not letting cancer sort of change your whole worldview, that now I can just get back to being a dad and a rabbi and sort of life goes on. I walk both sides of that sort of line. And you know, these are the types of things I think about a lot these days.
Yeah, I think as time goes on, you know, that those various feelings will settle down into a certain,
yeah.
You know, it's still to be determined, I imagine, because it's still new. This is still new.
It's pretty raw.
Fresh. Yeah, less than a year.
I had my last radiation treatments in June, right? So that was a couple of months ago, and I'm still getting scans very regularly. And I think you're right. I think over time, I'll be able to look back and I'll think about, okay, here is
right.
sort of who I am now post-cancer.
In the sermon, you allude to, I guess it was a sermon by a colleague of ours at Hebrew Union College ordination.
Right. Yeah, she spoke at the ordination in Cincinnati. Yeah.
And there's a sense from reading the sermon that one of the themes that emerges from this talk and from your and your experience is that in many ways, each of us in our own way over the course of our lifetime deal with, we're recovering from something.
Right.
Talk me through that. What did you
mean? Yeah, I think that was sort of at the heart of the sermon, this idea that every single one of us is wounded in some way. That we've dealt with illness, we've dealt with setbacks, we've dealt with loss, that we've all dealt with a lot. You know, this is part of the human condition. This is what it means to be a human being. We've all struggled in some way. You know, no matter how it looks from the outside, the person sitting next to you has dealt with something significant, and that maybe that changes sort of how we view each other, right? That when you sort of realize that the person who is, you know, opposite you and next to you has dealt with illness, has dealt with disappointment, that just changes how we relate to people. And that was sort of her hypothesis in her talk, that every one of us is carrying some kind of scar. And I think that's true. You know, I think that's really true. I felt that very much while I was sick, you know, that yes, I'm very visibly wounded right now, but I'm keenly aware of the fact that there are other people who are less visibly wounded, and just to try to be sensitive to that. And maybe that sort of brings a little more empathy to our world. You know, we live in a world where there's such division and rancor and people are so quick to judge and jump on top of each other. And that, you know, maybe this sort of softens us up a little bit if we realize that, you know, everyone, you know, even if they represent a total different political point of view, or different religion, different race, different ethnicity, everyone's a human being and we've all dealt with something, and maybe this brings us a little bit closer.
You know, for those of you who are not, you know, who may be outside our local area, Mount Laurel is basically suburban Philadelphia.
Right.
And because it is, and so Ben, you in the beginning of this sermon, you channeled Rocky.
Yeah.
Okay. How did Rocky get into this sermon?
Yeah. Well, I think part of one of the goals of the sermon was to not make it so heavy-handed. That's just not me. But rather to make it something that was going to be seen as sort of empowering and inspiring, and sort of taking cancer and turning it on his head. And, you know, the Rocky story, everyone who lives in Philly loves the Rocky story, and it resonates for us. It's a story of an underdog and sort of an underdog making it. And I say in the sermon that Philly itself is kind of an underdog, and we, you know, there's sort of an underdog mentality here in the Philly area. And we all sort of walk around with that a little bit. So for me, I wanted to sort of channel a little bit of that, you know, that I wasn't going to be beaten, and I was going to rise to the occasion, and, you know, against all odds, and, you know, all this sort of like very cliched kind of language.
Yeah, but it's true.
But I felt like, you know, I felt that in my heart, you know, that, you know, just like Rocky, and in the sermon, I talked not only about Rocky, but of the story of Sylvester Stallone and sort of coming really out of nowhere and growing up with nothing. And, you know, this notion that we too have it in us to overcome significant challenges. So it felt like sort of a good metaphor, not too heavy, relatable, at times even funny and sort of ironic. And so, you know, I went with it, and I came back to it throughout the sermon. And I think it worked, you know, I didn't want to speak at people regarding cancer for 20 minutes or however long the sermon was. You know, I wanted to tell a story. I wanted to make people laugh. I wanted to give people hope. And the Rocky story helped me to do that, I think.
So this is a Yom Kippur sermon.
Yeah.
Parasha Nitzavim.
Yeah.
Uvacharta Chaim, choose life.
Yeah.
And in the body of the sermon, you talk very, very beautifully about choices. And you talk about making choices for hope and understanding and laughter. Walk me through some of those choices. That really was the message, wasn't it?
Right.
Those choices.
Right. Well, you know, I'm still sort of working out what cancer taught me. But one of the things that I sort of argued in the sermon was this idea that, first of all, we should choose life. The Torah portion on Yom Kippur, as you say, urges us to choose life. But we could ask, what does that mean? What does that mean? It feels obvious in some ways. And I sort of say, here's what choosing life means to me now, having experienced and struggled with everything that I struggled with over the course of the past year. So, right. So I touched on these big areas, forgiveness, understanding, hope, and humor. And I see those as, you know, if we can sort of live those values, if we can make those values real in our lives, then maybe we are proactively, really proactively choosing life. And I talk about how those are core Jewish values, and they are, and how those values are at the heart of the High Holidays as well, understanding and forgiveness. And so I said a little bit about each of those sort of concepts. I shared a vignette or two. And those are values I try to live. I think those are values on some level we're all trying to live. But I also think those are values that are really hard to live sometimes, you know, to live with hope. You know, a lot of people have given up out there. And I talk about that in the sermon. They've given up on Washington. They've given up on Israel. They've given up on themselves. And I sort of urge people not to go there. And understanding and forgiveness, you know, is about not judging people just because they're a little bit different than you are. You know, that they come from a different place, or they pray differently, or they speak a different language, you know, but to seek rather a level of understanding and partnership with these people. So that's sort of where the sermon went, you know, and that all speaks to the fact that this wasn't just me sort of getting up there speaking about my story. This is about, here's what I learned and here's what I want to now impart based on what I've experienced. And I think that's what made it less about me and more about sort of we. And I think people appreciated that.
How did that part about laughter go? Because, you know, maybe somebody sitting in the congregation who will read this will say, my God, how can this man talk about laughter in the midst of such an amazing life crisis?
Right. Well, part of it was giving people permission to laugh.
Right.
And me saying, look, here I am. I had cancer. It's Yom Kippur day. You know, if I can laugh here and now, then maybe you can too, right? It was sort of opening that door. I mean, could there be a more somber day of the year than Yom Kippur? Could there be a scarier word than cancer? And, you know, sort of taking all that and turning it on its head a little bit and saying, look, here I am laughing. And I sort of end with this like funny little anecdote that sort of really got people laughing. It was good. And, you know, giving people permission to laugh. I mean, we walk around these days, this season especially, and people, I think a lot of times have gone to sort of a dark place. You know, they're in a place of sort of despair. Or maybe they've lost hope and, you know, they live with resentment, deep grudges, and sort of giving us permission to sort of let our shoulders down a little bit, take a breath, let it out. And laugh a little bit. I think that too is a Jewish idea. You know, I mean, it's no secret that our tradition loves comedy, laughter, sarcasm. This is what's gotten us through so much. So I'm a big believer in that.
So as we begin to conclude this, and again, thank you very much. And we're speaking with Rabbi Ben David, who's the senior rabbi of Congregation Adath Emanuel here in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. Looking back, as you said, you're still processing this thing. It's all within the last year, several months, literally. And what's the best piece? What's two things? What's the one thing you've learned out of this process? What's the one piece of advice that you think you can impart to other people who may be right now listening to this and just getting a diagnosis? What are those two pieces of advice?
Well, I think one is you're not alone. You know, in Judaism, we so value community. We talk about community all the time. And I think it's important to see that as much more than a word. It's more than a term. It's a way of life that we pray together, we celebrate together, we mourn together. And if you've received a diagnosis, God forbid, you're not alone. And thank God we live in a time when we can connect with other people, whether online or through support groups or what have you. I mean, the minute I found out I had non-Hodgkin's, this whole world opened up to me of other people who had non-Hodgkin's or currently have it or recovered from it. And I felt so good sort of hearing their stories.
You use the social media as a support?
Through social media, but also even in the hospital. And I got notes from people and I joined all sorts of stuff on Facebook and whatnot. And all of a sudden I wasn't alone. So I think that's a key. And I think the other key is to not feel the need to hide your emotion, right? We live in sort of a society in which we're almost encouraged to sort of put on a brave face.
The mask.
Put on a mask and pretend everything is fine and you're brave and you're strong and, you know, and that there can't be any weakness whatsoever. I think you should feel that you have full clearance to emote. And if you're feeling frustrated, be frustrated. If you're feeling angry, be angry. And find someone that you can sort of talk to about all those emotions, but don't hide it. Don't keep it in. You know, I think there's this sort of cultural need to turn cancer patients into warriors.
Well, no, that's the whole issue of the medical, it's a war vocabulary mentality.
Right. Yeah. And there is so much of that. And, while I understand it and it sort of helps everyone to feel better, on the other hand, I think sometimes it does us all a disservice. You know, you don't have to be a warrior. You can be a human being. And being a human being sometimes means being upset and angry and all of these things. And you should feel those things. So, you know, that those are sort of two big takeaways for me. And I'm just so thankful that I say this and I do mean it, that in the end, and it's precisely because I came through it, cancer was a blessing for me because it taught me so much and it gave me such insight into what we're capable of. And it helped me to understand what it means to go through something significant. And I think it's made me a better rabbi, hopefully a better dad, better human being. So here we are.
Last quick question. You mentioned the power of community.
Yeah.
And you're the rabbi of a community, a fairly large and significant and growing community.
Yeah.
What was that? Did that relationship change or did you feel that constant support and being held by literally thousands of people?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, to be a rabbi and to do congregational work is to be in a relationship. And I think as in any relationship, you know, the dynamic changes over time. For us in this relationship, we grew closer as a result of what I experienced. You know, we just learned more about each other. I learned more about them. They would come rushing in with their stories and, oh, my mom had this, my sister had this, my brother. And all of a sudden I knew more about you. And vice versa. You know, all of a sudden they were visiting me in my hospital room. You know, and so it felt like we grew closer as a result. We know more about each other. We've endured something together. And they were so there for me. They really were. And I felt that. I felt the love. I did. I really did.
Well, they're very lucky to have you and vice versa.
Very nice.
Ben David, Congregation Out of Emmanuel in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. Thank you very, very much. And thank you for listening to Jewish Sacred Aging Podcast Series. All of these podcasts are archived on our website, www.jewishsacredaging.com. And again, we welcome your comments and suggestions to rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. And we invite you to visit the website and the site's Facebook page. And we look forward to greeting you at our next session. And thank you for your support and attention. A reminder that these podcasts are are recorded through the facilities of Lubetkin Media here in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. To all of you, the Hitra'ot and Shalom.